All right, I want to welcome everybody out to Biz Ninja Radio. We've got a really cool guest today, and it's not just in the name. So we've got Jason Hammer-Helmer, and I've known Jason on digitally here online for a few months now, and have seen him just always drop value bombs and help people out and just be a true professional. So first of all, because I'm sure everyone is curious, how'd the nickname Hammer come out?
You know, you would think it's because I was 6 foot tall riding a motorcycle with a goatee. However, it actually started when I was 20 or 21 years old. I was a manager for Electrolux, the vacuum cleaner company. And one of the vice presidents, his name was Peter Fabiano. We used to have manager conference calls. Remember back before all this wonderful technology like Zoom, you'd be on the old call and there'd be background and you'd have to report in your numbers and everybody feared Peter. And, you know, most of the managers were like, you know, they were in their 40s and, you know, running branches and stuff. And I was 21 and he would call me the Hammer. And he would say, all right, what are the numbers? Where's the Hammer? And everybody just ate that up. And of course, nobody ever called me Jason at that point. It was, hey, it's Hammer. And yeah. Then everyone hears that and it just builds. And what's funny is when I got into the mortgage business, I said, well, I've got to be professional now. I'm going to go by Jason. So I was like, oh, I'm Jason. Hi, I'm Jason. And someone's like, hey, Hammer, what's going on? And then agent's like, Hammer. Oh, hi, Hammer. And then it just went. And now I don't even fight it. And it's like Cher and Madonna. I'm just that guy. Yeah. Nobody ever says, oh, yeah, you're Jason. But they all go, oh, wait, you're that guy, Hammer.
Oh, sure.
So it was, I found it to be the best branding. And that's when I started to learn about branding.
Yeah, that's a pretty cool first experience in there. Now, you started kind of doing your own thing and hustling like at 17, right? So I think a lot of people, there's always the debate of, are people born entrepreneurs? Is that just who we are? Or, you know, can you really learn to become? And I tend to believe that there are people that are just naturally entrepreneurial and natural hustlers. Is that where you fall into?
I would agree, because when I was 17, I was legally emancipated. I was on my own. I was a senior in high school, and my mother said, I'm moving to upstate New York, and you can either stay here by yourself and finish high school, or you can come with. And I said, yeah, I'm going to stay. I moved around a lot as a kid. I went to 13 different schools, and I was kind of done with that. And so I started my own company at 17 called All You Need Landscaping. I did a lot of research on business law back then. I just went out and made business cards.
Right.
Passed them all out, started collecting money. Yeah. You know, sales tax, you know, income tax. What was that? And, but before that, you know, you talk about, was it a nature or a nurture thing? I don't know about you, but I can remember being, you know, 13, 14 years old. And in the winters you would shovel snow and in the fall you would rake leaves. And I learned very quickly that I could do 2 and 3 times as much if I would keep half the money and have someone else do the work with me. So I would go out and I would sell the jobs and then I would put people in, okay, you do this one, you do that one, you do that one. And make money. You know, at about 14 years old, we were doing that. And then I'd have to pay some kid that was 17 or 18 to drive us around. So that was, you know, I would say it starts young, and I would say it's probably a born thing that's nurtured.
So I agree with that. I think you have the personality and it can be developed. And so different people may have different kind of levels of it, if you will. But I think it's really hard to teach someone who has no entrepreneurial drive to become an entrepreneur. I think that's, they may be able to become self-employed, but I think that's different to me than an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I like that. I agree with that.
Yeah, I think to me, you know, you were at 14, were being an entrepreneur, not a business owner, because you were already looking, how can it scale, right? A lot of people tell that same story, but it's just they were working. They created a job for themselves, which is great, but they're very different things in both their impact to the individual and to society.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of like the franchise owner, right? They're a great business owner, but they didn't create the business. The franchisor did. They were the entrepreneur.
And you know what happens, I'll say on that? The difference, you know, going down this vein of self-employed versus entrepreneur, bringing a franchise owner. A friend of mine and I used to talk about people buying themselves into a job. And I think, you know, I think I must have heard that phrase in someone's book or in someone's something, but a lot of people do that. You know, they become self-employed. And again, you've never seen people work 80 hours to avoid working 40. And, you know, so they get in and they basically buy themselves a position. They buy themselves a job, and a franchise can put you in that position real quick.
Yeah. At 22, I bought a franchise. I bought a restaurant and very quickly realized that I bought myself a minimum wage job. I was making sandwiches and frozen yogurt. And now had I taken the entrepreneurial route of scaling it and owning a bunch of them, then, you know, I have friends that do that with, you know, a few different franchises, then that's great. But I sold it a year later and never looked back to restaurants. But so you, I mean, you know, you did that for a while. And now it sounds like a lot of people that, you know, that I know, I've been in mortgages in the past. You've been in mortgages. We probably know, you know, thousands of people that have dabbled there. Right. But my guess is that you were pretty successful. Is that where you had your first big hit, or did you do something before you got into the mortgage world?
You know what? Selling vacuum cleaners door to door. Electrolux, yeah. Selling vacuum cleaners was where I started, where I got sales training, which, you know, you and I met in the digital marketing arena. And I would say that if I were to look and say there's one thing missing with most digital marketers, they don't understand selling. They don't understand the psychology behind it. There's a lot of hacking. And the problem with hacking is it's a bad photocopy. They don't understand what's behind it and why. And that's why it doesn't generally work. You know, it's more than a recipe to be a great chef. Otherwise, everybody could do it. There's a talent, there's an art, there's an understanding of the food and the ingredients and how it all comes together. So selling vacuum cleaners door to door was probably, you know, where I really cut my teeth and learned, you know, just living room selling.
Yeah.
And I would do crazy things at that age, like just grab a vacuum cleaner, get dropped off somewhere and not go home until I sold it, you know? So, and I decided to get married when I was 30, but instead I did it at 21. So obviously that decision was taken out of my hands very quickly. And I had kids at 20 or 21 and, which I love today. I've got a, you know, 19-year-old daughter and 18-year-old son, but at being a kid myself, I was the sole breadwinner, you know, and I had to bring home the money. Yeah. And, so that was where I got my first big success, was with the vacuum cleaners. I had hit some obstacles, and you talk about being an entrepreneur. I think that we have a certain level of a tolerance for pain.
Sure.
That might be higher than normal. And I was without a driver's license, nothing bad like a DWI, but again, just not paying attention to the little details. I was 19 years old. I had gotten, I could tell stories all day long, but I had gotten thrown out of the house I was renting for too many parties, is the nutshell version.
Right.
And I didn't realize my insurance had been canceled due to an accident that I had in New Jersey. If you don't have drivers, if you don't have liability insurance, you lose your license for a year.
Yep.
So, anyway, long story short, I lost my license. So I didn't have a car. And here it is. I've got a family, can't drive. And I'm selling vacuum cleaners, which you put them in your car and you go to people's houses and you sell them. So I would hire drivers and hitch rides with other people and train. And that's how I got into management, because I realized, hey, if I train these people, then they drive for me. This is like awesome. So I became like a great assistant manager. They would put me with all the new people and I was, you know, doing that. And then they put me as a branch manager. And so I ended up, that was where I cut my teeth. I really got into the highest level of success. I was one of the top 15 managers in a company over 400. I got all expenses paid trips, which I still miss that piece of the business. I went to San Francisco and, you know, a cruise and went to Paris, was given $2,500 to spend. I'm 21, 22 years old. They had this special pass. I went to the Louvre Museum and there's a line all the way around the corner. And they had told me, you take this pass and you go to the front of the line. And I'm thinking somebody's going to, like, you know, they're going to come after me if I walk to the front of this line. But I walk to the line, I show this ticket to the guy, and he takes us around to a side door and brings us into the Louvre. It was just, that was the coolest thing. And I was hooked.
Once you get that taste, it's pretty amazing. You know, because success gives you, you know, and those kind of rewards, you know, it's the carrot, right? Carrot rather than stick. But, you know, I was thinking about what you said, where really, like, in the digital marketing world, the number of people that are missing that, having knock doors, right? And I did that for years as well, where I did door to door work. And, you know, the hacking kills me, because it's they, you know, and we see in sales funnels, right? People say, hey, does anyone have a funnel for this? And it's like, one funnel is, you know, the funnel is the, like, delivery system. But if you have no psychology behind it, if you have no model behind it, like, there's an art to it, like you were saying, where if it's not being crafted, then they're not always going to connect. I mean, you might occasionally have that rare miss or rare hit, I should say, where, you know, okay, maybe it does okay, but you're never going to have that stratospheric success. That you're not going to just take, oh, this is a $1 million funnel, it'll be a $1 million funnel for me. there's too many other variables.
Yeah.
I think you've studied neuro-linguistic programming and sales and that kind of stuff. How do you apply that to, you know, business on a daily basis?
You know, I love me some NLP.
Right.
Yeah. You look at a guy like Frank Kern and you see what a master of NLP really can do and what he's come back from. So applying it to everyday business really just goes back to thinking from the consumer's point of view. No matter right. which product it is, whether I'm consulting, because, you know, I do coaching, consulting for other industries beyond the products that I own.
Sure.
And you're trying to explain to them, they've got to know their avatar, but they've got to dig deeper than that. I love some of the stuff by Don Miller and StoryBrand. And that's, again, very much like other things I've heard and read in the past. Back years ago, Andy Jenkins, who has a video background, was a movie maker and went to school for movie making. And he talked about the Hollywood templates for the hero's journey and all these different pieces. And Russell Brunson's guy talks about that. And so all of those things come into play where you start to understand the consumer. And if you start there, you know, the headline, instead of the headline formula of, you know, how to have A without doing B, it becomes where you go deeper and you realize, what do people really want? What are they trying to resolve? What pain are they trying to get rid of? So that's how it starts to come into play, because if you think like the consumer, everything else falls into place rather than trying so hard to come up with the right template and fitting the pieces in the box and making it work and then right. wondering why it doesn't. You know,
right.
let's face it, sincerity, authenticity, that's that connection, especially in today's day and age with live streaming video and the casualness
right.
of our consumer and millennials and Snapchat. And, you know, they expect real. They want to see that integrity and not just something that looks like it was calculated because, you know, some guru gave you this great box formula and a three module box set.
Yeah. Polished and perfect is actually has become secondary to real and vulnerable. And it's a great opportunity for marketers because, you know, you can kind of peel back the kimono and just be more open and start, but you know, you also then have to be okay saying no to a population, right? And that's been the big, being willing to polarize has been one of the things I've had to learn, right? To say, okay,
right.
no, I don't want to appeal to the whole segment. I've got to say no to some people and not only say no, but push them away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a problem that I've run into as well. And again, being the guy hammer and,
yeah.
you know, I worked for somebody and he said, well, you know, I want you to be Jason. And I said, no, you know, I'm not going to be vanilla. I don't want to please everybody. I don't go out of my way to aggravate anybody.
Sure.
But you look at guys like Stuman, Ryan Stuman, look
right,
at the success
right.
that he's enjoying, you know, that overnight success that took him years and years.
Yeah.
And I've watched him for years, you know, but
yeah.
he really clicked when he built a tribe of people that think and act and talk like him and
yeah.
they're comfortable around him. And that's why a lot of what he teaches will work for them. When you
right.
try to be everything to everybody, you're nothing to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, and so I agree with you there.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you've got a lot going on and you said something to me as we were preparing for this that really resonated with me. And it was, two things. You talked about, having dinner with your family set in stone. And then you mentioned, you know, basically, this whole concept of the glamorization of working, you know, all night and not having, you know, just all, if you went to bed broke, then you shouldn't have gone to bed. Right.
Right.
Like, I agree with you that that's wrong. Right. So let's talk a little bit about just like work-life balance, if such a thing exists, and how you're managing that, even though you're seeing success in your business.
You know, I think, the word balance is a great word because it's something that you never seem to achieve. It's always bouncing one way or the other. And, you know, it's funny that you bring those two things up because that was in Facebook Messenger. It was when we were setting up the time for this. And yeah, 6 p.m., you know, is my dinner time. And we have a sit-down dinner. There's never any phones. There's never a TV on. And it's been that way for the entire time that my kids have grown up. And I can really say that that's had an effect on our family structure that I never would have known because I didn't grow up with that. And it's something that my wife, you know, when she first said, well, you turn the TV off when you eat dinner, I'm like, what? No, the TV's on all the time. I mean,
yeah.
come on. We don't ever turn the TV off when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I have to say it was huge. So, and that was something too, as well. You're talking about balance. I don't think there ever is balance. There's always something that's not getting done. There's always something that, has it's triage. You have to figure out what's most important. And having, you know, holding true to, okay, well, it's going to be my family and what that means, that could be hard. There's certainly things that we've given up. I went broke in 2009. It was the most distasteful humble pie I have ever eaten in my life. And I hope I tell you, anyone who's ever made money, it's because they went broke first, because sure. You never want to go back there. And, you know, we were forced to make decisions at that time. My mother had just passed away. I was not a day late on a single thing, but everything had just mounted. I was in the mortgage business at a time when they had the mortgage meltdown. Yep. And no matter how much time I was putting in, it wasn't working. I was alienating from my family. We were in a big house. I was always in my office. I was, you know, my wife was in her section. My kids were in theirs. And I said, you know what, this isn't going to work. And we downsized to a 1300 square foot house. And we were on top of each other. And it was the greatest thing that happened, because we were forced to interact. I was able to cut a lot of that other stuff out. And you did. You decided where was life going to be. And my focus was always, I'm a scoutmaster. I've run my son's hockey league. I was always the coach, my daughter's soccer team, and years of that. And that was all important to me. And what I'd said to you on the Facebook Messenger was, I said, I'm ashamed to say that I'm working late tonight because I need to get caught up. And it's not the badge of honor that everyone makes it to be.
I agree.
Because when I'm at my most successful, it's when I'm not forced to put in 60 and 70 and 80 hours. It's when I am able to enjoy a little bit more of what's going on and not have that attitude of, well, I'm going to have it in the next life.
Yeah.
You know, so I agree that that's a big piece, and it's hard. It's hard to stick to your guns on that. And it takes a lot of, more than discipline, I think it takes a certain structure. You know, you've got to have certain days that you will cut off, and you always feel like you're leaving something, especially as an entrepreneur, when it's your baby and it's your business. I was really thinking that, you know, just not too long ago, it was like, man, when am I ever going to feel like I'm not behind?
Right.
But that's because I always am looking so far ahead.
That's a good way. Yeah. That's a good explanation of that. Yeah, that's actually, I mean, yeah, if you're always looking, and the entrepreneur is the visionary, right? They see the future, or they see the future as they believe it can be. And then their job is to then create a path to that future. And an entrepreneur, therefore, is always behind. They're always living into them a now false past, right? That, because they see the future as a different place if they can only do the things that they've now built in their mind. And then we have to create it and make it a reality. And, you know, I went through, it's funny how many of our parts of our story really line up. You know, I went through the mortgage thing, and a lot of entrepreneurs I talk about, almost everyone brings up 2008 or 2009. And, you know, I rebuilt it, and I built this amazing business that really truly was a 4-hour work week business that gave me lifestyle design, all that kind of stuff that was amazing. And I slowly got away from that. And then I get to this place where all of a sudden it's just like thousands of plates spinning and nothing getting done the way I want. And so now I'm back to that point of, how do I bridge the next step to get back to that, you know, the next level of success, but also like in the life that you actually want.
Right.
So what do you do when you see somebody come in and says, man, I just have way too many things going on. I've got all of this. I'm too busy. I'm working 90 hours weeks, right? What's the hammer going to say?
Well, I mean, the first thing is that you have to decide what you're going to cut, as painful as it is. And nobody wants to do that. We want to think that we can do it all, and we don't want to let anything go, and we don't want to say no. And you really do. You have to focus on one project at a time until you can get to fruition. And sometimes it's the one, it's not your passion products. I don't want to say hate, it's a very strong word, but I feel it's very misleading, these people that are like, I'm a heart-centered entrepreneur who followed my passion, and now I have this. And if you are passionate about what you do, and if you follow your passions, man, passion isn't always. Sometimes you got to do the taxes first, even though you hate doing the taxes.
Yep.
And so I think that a lot of that comes down to recognizing you have to keep track of your time. And I don't know if anyone's ever had you try to keep track of your time. They were like, you've got to write everything down. So here I am. I'm like, okay, got a cup of coffee. Okay, got rid of coffee. Okay, got another cup of coffee. Okay, I'm spending more time writing things down than I am actually doing anything. And I said, I can't do this, but I need a way to track stuff. Now, again, we're at digital marketing.
Yeah.
I've got more technology. I'm in a man cave. It's my 12 by 16 shed. I've got literally $15,000 worth of computer equipment. Don't tell anybody where I live.
Yeah.
Sitting in my man cave, right? Yeah. And I mean, I love technology, but what do I go back to? I go back to, you know, just this is the Arc system from Staples. You can see that there. Is my newest favorite, but you know, I just go back to paper. Same thing with the calendar that's here and trying to figure out where things are going to be on the year. So I color code. Orange is personal. Blue is necessary, what I call servicing. Green is money earning activities or money making activities. It's your positive cash flow. And then yellow and red are for redder things that I really need to avoid doing. Yellow is more for attention. And I would rate my day based on my color coding because I couldn't write down everything I was doing. It wasn't working, but I'd go in 15 or 30 minute blocks and I would just throw a color in there real quick. You know, all right. So let's say that I've sold a $15,000 project for a branding to this person. We're working on that. That's blue. I already sold the 15 grand. Now I've got to deliver it. That's a necessary activity.
Yes.
But how much green do I have coming in for the next day? What am I focusing on for next month? Where am I bringing in income? Because I've definitely found myself in that roller coaster where you sell a bunch of stuff and then you're delivering on that. And then next thing you know, you're like, oh, where am I going to bring my paycheck in next week? How did I end up in this situation?
Yeah. What's funny is it's really common with loan officers. They have the big pipeline push. Then they're getting all the docs. They're getting everything sorted. They're getting funded. And then all of a sudden the next month it's like zeros and they got a whole prospecting month again. And so we come from that world where the good ones figured that out. And so now we've got to apply it into this. And what's interesting, I've never thought about it like that. But it's actually really very much the same way. If you're not growing the business, if you're not always prospecting, you're going to get the same kind of bullwhip or the same kind of lag as
right. And you know, we've got the advantage of having some evergreen products or maybe, but when are you going to do a webinar or when are you going to roll out a new product and what are you doing to get there? And that's something that I've worked a lot harder on. The other thing is it's so difficult to truly step away from things that you enjoy doing that you say only you can do. Or for me, they're just things that I enjoy doing or want to learn more about. You know, my project manager gets on me all the time. We're ClickFunnels guys and I love ClickFunnels. It's like a toy, you know? Right. And then you know Mark Bangerter. So, you know, I'm like, Mark, how do I use CSS to do like this? These are things I should not be doing. You know, I have an hourly rate of $500 an hour to write copy. And here I am like playing inside a CSS inside of ClickFunnels. And my project manager loses his mind. And it's like, yeah, but I really like that. He goes, listen, on Saturday, instead of riding your motorcycle, if you want to come in and build a page in ClickFunnels, go ahead. In the meantime, could we please hire somebody to do this while you do this? And he's got a great point when he does it. And I'm like, you know, so those are probably the things you got to figure out. Where should your time be spent and track it so it is in a way that's not so cumbersome. For entrepreneurs, most of them that I met are not an engineer mentality. You've got two mentalities in the world. You got your sales mentality and your engineer mentality. Right. And the engineers are great. I don't know if, are you familiar with DISC testing, the DISC, the dominant, the Okay, yeah. So it's personality testing. It's great for figuring out where someone's going to fit in your organization and how effective they're going to be. And you know, usually, you know, guys like us, we're high D or high I, we're interactive, we're dominant, we're moving things, we're shaking, and we're very bad at the C, the compliance or the focus on getting the dotting the I's and crossing the T's. And
right.
So what happens is you really have to be aware of where your strengths are. And then you've got to have somebody else that's picking up your pieces. And I know that I'm a visionary and that's why I have a project manager who's more like a COO and it's his job to figure out, okay, well, there's two guys in a relationship, you know, two people in a relationship, and it can be a marriage. There's the person who's always positive and they're running whatever. And then there's the person that's always pointing it out. We can't drive there. It's going to take too long. There's not enough gas in the car, you know? And I'm just like, it doesn't matter. We'll get gas. I'm moving to North Carolina and people are like, Hammer, your house has DSL. You're an internet guy. I'm like, doesn't matter. It's going to work out.
We'll figure it out.
I'll figure it out. You know, there's a cable company down there. What is it going to cost me to run cable? 10 grand, 15 grand. You know, they've probably not had a guy come in with a blank check and say, how much is it going to cost me to run cable to my house? But if that's what it takes, that's what I'll do. And I think that a big piece of that is, you know, really just being tracking your time in a way that we can do because we're not focused on those details, writing down everything that you do. Just color coding it has always worked very well. I love a vision board. you know, goals, SMART goals. SMART goals are great, but I love dumb goals. Dumb goals are those big goals that you, you know, your stretch goals. They're the things that you're really pushing for, your vision at the end of the year. And I love a vision board. I'm a very visual person. Every year I've done a vision board, whether that was back in the day, we would take cutouts from magazines and paste them, you know, with glue sticks. Now I do it digitally. And, you know, I love looking at the vacations that I have and the things that I've bought, because they were on my vision board. And like this year, 2018 Harley, you know, I want a new bike in August. My house was on there and I'm closing in May. You know, the house that I'm buying, you know, it wasn't for sale. I saw it when it was for sale and they took it off the market. And then I kept telling people, I'm like, this is the house I'm going to buy. And they're like, it's not for sale. And I'm like, listen, if it was for sale once, it'll be for sale again. It's just the number. And, you know, I called the owner and we came to a number. So it's what you are.
We have one of those right now where I've got it. I'm not ready to have the phone call yet, but if I shouldn't say if, right, when I get to that point, I'm just going to start, I'm going to knock on the door. And we, we've done it before. I've bought houses. I've bought, you know, probably four or five houses that weren't on the market. Just, you know, a nice letter with the picture of my family and starts a conversation. So I love that. And I love the big, hairy, audacious goals, right? So I just, I in my little notebook, I just wrote some BHAGs. I just think it's a fun name. And, but I mean, I think SMART goals are important. Building those milestones, that's when you're setting like the business operational goals. And
Right. That's what gets you to your dumb goals.
Yeah. But then you've got to also have that thing that's just like, I'm going to be stoked when I'm, you know, when I'm on my Harley and that future pacing and all that kind of stuff. What's the next big, or, you know, what's your big project right now? What's the big thing you're building? What's getting you the most excited other than CSS and ClickFunnels?
So the brand I have now is Originator Success, and it's really providing, I want to say modern 2017 type online lead generating tools for mortgage originators. Your average originator is in their 50s or above, and you know they've done things the same way for years after years. And nobody ever goes out of high school and says, "I'm going to college because I want to write loans." It's just one of those industries where we kind of fall into. And it's a lot of great people, but none of them that you ever talk to ever really planned on going there. So my point with that is nobody ever gets educated on what they need to do to get there. They learn from everyone else in the industry. So, you know, there's a saying, you never follow advice from someone more screwed up than you are. And yet that's kind of what perpetuates those problems. So I'm very passionate. There it is. I'm following my passion. And that's why I'm losing money, by the way, because I'm very passionate about providing very affordable solutions to originators. You know, stuff that I see other people doing for $100 a month or $200 a month, I do for $27 a month. And my business coach says to me, what are you doing? You know, this should be three times the price. And I said, but it's not just about the money. It's the value. And it sounds cliche, but a lot of us that have achieved success, we are, you know, grateful for it and grateful for all that we have been able to earn. And that has been opened up to us to earn. And our way of giving back is, you know, by doing as many of these things that we can that provide for other people and give them that opportunity. So, but I also, the mortgage space is a very small niche, so I want to just get this baby where it's fully evergreen, running on its own, and I'm almost there. And then I want to kind of see where else in the digital world, you know, what else we can do to get some other people going. And what's funny is in 2010, when I ended up accidentally in digital marketing, I thought that the internet, man, I wish I had gotten in on that thing when you could have made money at it. You know, I mean, holy smokes, that must have been really cool. And in the mortgage industry, they came out with a change in regulations and they came out with what they call the 2010 good faith estimate. And it was a radical change that mortgage originators were struggling to get their heads wrapped around. And part of the reason I've kept my nickname is because I'm about as subtle as a train wreck and about as blunt as just a ball, you know, as a heavy hammer. And I'm like, guy, you need to just get over it. You need to stop whining and you need to learn how to take this and sell with it. And I got invited onto someone else's webinar. And I was like, I'll do a webinar. Sounds cool. This webinar thing. Right. And I was on for the last 5 minutes. We ran about 25 minutes long. We didn't lose a single person. Now this is in 2010. Webinars were not nearly as big of a, you know, people are kind of bored with them now, but it was a huge thing. And he goes, you were the best presenter I've ever seen. He goes, you know, I just don't know how you did that. And I said, I don't know. I just told them what I did and how I used his product and how it worked out. And people were loving it. And I said, I'll tell you what though, I have this idea for this good faith estimate where we can teach originators how to go out and sell with it. Now he had an audience, he had a video, he had a couple guys who worked for him that had a video show. And they had, you know, tens of thousands of originators that were watching. And I said, so you've got the audience, which is, you know, the traffic, if you will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've got the content. You're a guy that jumps from project to project. Who's your assistant? Because I want to talk to them so I can get this on the board. So we got it on the board. We did 4 webinars. We made $45,000 at $37 a pop.
Oh, wow.
The last webinar had 600 and something people on it. I was using GoToWebinar. They had a technical problem. There was some guy from another call on the webinar on his cell phone screaming the whole time, like for like a 15-minute stretch. I lost like 3/4 of the audience. They were like, mute that guy. I'm like, guys, this is not us. You know, like I had somebody else running the webinar. She's like, I don't know what's going on. And I ended up having to re-record the full 2-hour thing, get it out to everybody and make good on it. And we had not a single cancellation. So, but anyway, $45,000 on 4 webinars. And I'm like, I like this internet marketing stuff, you know? That's what really got it going. And then I started building a product that they had called RateAlert.com, which was a mortgage-backed security data feed service. It was provided alerts to mortgage originators when the markets would move. Yep. And I built up this, you know, recurring revenue product for somebody that they didn't need to give any attention to. And they were making, you know, just let's say for round numbers, let's say it was about $70,000 a month. And they weren't, that was after their expenses. I'm like, wow, this is something I should pay attention to. And that's why I love the recurring revenue model.
Yeah. And one of the things that honestly, I still struggle to grasp is just how large the market actually is, even in a niche. Yeah. So like even in a niche of mortgage originators, like the ability that you're able to have a webinar that has that many people that are able to buy it. And there's still thousands of people that never even heard about it. Right.
Yep.
And
that I have no idea who I am.
Yeah, like when I hear of like niche supplements going from $30,000 a month to almost $1 million months, I'm like, are there that many people that really have fibromyalgia and need to buy joint medicine? Like really? And yeah, there are. It's just, it's incredible when you really start doing the math on how many people are out there that have specific pain points of mortgage originators or people with specific, you know, physical conditions or whatever. But, and then learning to speak to them, right, correctly, it really just opens up a world of opportunity.
Well, I know we're getting close on time. One last value bomb that comes on that piece though, is when you have to recognize too, when you've got your customer, I don't remember what the pure analytics are, but let's face it, it's so much easier if you've taken care of them to sell them the next product and to come out with things again, for their benefit, not be for your pocket, but for their benefit.
Right.
That when you do have that niche, once you develop a base or a tribe or the people that are buying from you, as long as you continue to be aware of what they need and think about what comes next, you know, whether it's your value ladder and you go up in price, or whether it's just, you know, ancillary cross-sell products,
right,
or refilling that fibromyalgia, you know, putting them onto a monthly where it just automatically shows up at their door. That's where the key is. I mean, there's so much to be done. If you remember, I see so many guys and girls that are out there chasing after these courses and they're chasing after the new dollar, you know, and their Facebook advertising and they're this. And I have done a terrible job of any of that stuff because I have a list and a tribe. I have somebody that called me up the other day. They were on a webinar. It was a $2,000 product. He goes, Hammer, I caught the last 15 minutes. I put in my credit card. What did I buy? And I'm like, Joe, oh no, I hope you didn't, because you already have half this stuff. You know, like it was a package. I'm like, oh man. You know, so like that's
when people are that.
Yeah. You know, and
that bought in, that vested in what you're giving them.
Sure. And you know, the Russells have it, the Frank Kearns have it, you know, Russell Brunts, you know, the Ryan Dices have it. It's like, okay, whatever you have, count me in. That's when you can feel good, because you know that you're delivering and you know that it's working, and it's just a win-win. And that's to me, that's always what I'm looking for, is a win-win.
Absolutely. All right. So I have my big last question that I've asked everyone since I started the show is, and you kind of covered a couple of them. You got one that we already know of, is we work to live, right? So we do these things so that we can live the lives we want to do. What's one major item on your bucket list, right, that you're going to accomplish here in the near future? I know you got the Harley and the house and you've been to the Louvre. What's one other big thing you want to do?
You know, I would love to get up that Pacific Coast Highway on the bike. So that's nice. Something that'll be on there.
I love it. That'd be great. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to Biz Ninja Radio here on ABC News. You've been on with Jason Hammer Helmer and Tyler Jorgensen. Go out and do something.